Kosher, the invitation, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 24.
Beloved Bhagwan, how is it that going into something consciously has such a power to reveal all the threads which make up the tangle?
Devagit. The reality is just the opposite. All our tangles in life are created by our unconsciousness. So the moment you become conscious, those tangles disappear. It is not the power of consciousness that makes them disappear. It is the power of unconsciousness that creates them. All the tangles of life, of love, of relationship, are created by our unconsciousness. We don't know what we are doing. And by the time we become aware, it is too late. What has been done cannot be undone. And our unconsciousness is very supportive of the ego. They have a coexistence. Coming of consciousness will not only disperse all the tangles, it will also disperse you as an ego. It is a very complicated and complex phenomenon. In your unconsciousness, you do something. And it is almost certain that once you have done something wrong that has created misery in you, around you, you will come to your senses. But you cannot undo it because the ego comes in between. You cannot even say, I'm sorry. just a simple apology may disperse the tangle, but the ego won't allow even that. And you are almost a victim. You are not doing things. Your unconsciousness, your unawareness goes on forcing you to do things. Just the last night I had answered Prem Sunya's question. Very lightly and very lovingly and very joyously I joked about it. But she was pissed off. I could see her face. Milarepa was angry. You don't know what you are doing. You are doing is almost beyond your hands. You are reacting. If Prem Sunya has heard what I have been telling, I was simply telling, don't take it seriously. I was laughing about it, but she could not laugh. You all laughed because it was not your problem. The more you laugh, the more you made her serious. In each person's life, the time of change comes. And one of the greatest things to remember, then when you change a certain pattern of life, you have to change naturally. It is not in your hands. Biology makes you capable of sex at the age of 13 or 14. It is not your doing. At a certain age, as you are coming closer to 40 or 42, the biology's purpose is finished. All those hormones that have been propelling you are disappearing. To accept this change is very difficult. You suddenly start thinking as if you are no more beautiful, that you need a facelift. I have heard about a woman who was talking to the plastic surgeon that I need a facelift. The surgeon looked at him and he said, there is nothing wrong. It is just age. Don't be worried about it. Why unnecessarily go into the trouble? But the women were insistent. So the doctor said, okay. But it will cost $5,000. The woman said, that much money I don't have. Can't you suggest something cheaper? The doctor said, yes. You can purchase a veil. It is one of the Western problems. In the East, no woman is worried. Things are accepted as they come. Acceptance has been the basic foundation of Eastern life. The West is continuously imposing on the nature, demanding how things should be. Nobody wants to become old. So when the time of transition from one stage of life comes, a very strange phenomena happens. And that's what is happening to Sunyo. I did not say, because I did not want to hurt her. And it is going to happen whether I say anything about it or not. Just as a candle comes to the very end and is only for a few seconds more and will be gone. At the last moment, the candle suddenly becomes bigger with all its power. Nobody wants to go. It is a well-known fact to medical science that people at the time of death suddenly became completely healthy. All their diseases disappear. This is the last effort of their life to resist death. The people who are related to them feel very happy that suddenly all diseases have disappeared. The person has become calm and quiet. But they don't know. It signifies death. The diseases have disappeared because their function is fulfilled. They have killed the man. Now it is the last spur of life. The same happens with every biological change in life. When sex is becoming irrelevant, you start thinking of sex more than ever. And suddenly a great whisper. And that's what is giving her the idea that it seems she is sex repressed. because so much sexuality suddenly overwhelming the mind can only understand logically, rationally one thing, that from where this sexuality is coming, it must be coming from the repressed unconscious. That's what Sigmund Freud and their followers have been teaching to the whole world. They are right on many points, they are wrong on many points. Particularly about this point, the transition when you are no more young and the hormones in you are going to disappear, and the interest in sex is going to die. Before dying, it will explode with its full force. And if you go to a psychoanalyst, he will say that you are sexually repressed. I cannot say that, because I know that this sudden overwhelming sexuality will be gone by itself. You don't have to do anything. It is the signal that life is passing through a change. Now life will be more calm and more quiet. You are really entering into a better stage. Sex is a little childish. As you become more and more mature, sex loses the grip over you. And it is a good sign. It is something to be happy about. It is not a problem to be solved. It is something to celebrate. In the East, no woman ever feels the trouble of the transition from youth to old age. In fact, she feels immensely happy that now that old demon is gone and life can be more peaceful. But the West has been living under many illusions. One is the illusion that there is only one life. That creates immense trouble. If there is only one life and sex is disappearing, so you are finished. Now there is no more opportunity. There will not be any more excitement in life. Nobody is going to say you are beautiful and I love you and I will love you forever. So first the illusion of one life creates a problem. Second, the psychoanalysts and other therapists have created another illusion that sex is almost synonymous to life. The more sexual you are, the more alive you are. So when sex starts disappearing, one starts feeling like a used cartridge. Now there is no point to live. Life ends with sex ending. And then people try all kinds of bizarre things, facelift, plastic surgery, false breasts. It is stupid, simply stupid. People start trying wigs. They start trying dresses which are sex provoking. Almost the whole Western woman is starving. They call it dieting. Because the idea in the West is that a woman is beautiful if she is not fat. And the nature has some other idea. The woman has to be a little fat. Because the woman, for nature, is a mother. And a mother needs extra fat for the child, because when the child is in her womb, he will need food. And when the child is in the womb, the mother starts feeling nausea, she cannot eat, she starts growing up. She needs emergency fat in her body so she can feed the child, because the child needs food. He is growing fast. Science says that 9 months in mother's womb, a child grows so fast that he will never grow again in his 70 years' time, so fast. In 9 months, he passes almost the whole evolution of man from the fish. All the stages. And his requirements have to be fulfilled by the mother. And she cannot eat. You can imagine, it is troublesome to have a child in your stomach. I don't think any man will be ready to be pregnant. He will commit suicide. Without any doubt, he will jump from a 50-story building, but I'm finished. Pregnant? Just think the idea that you are having a child in the stomach. And you will go crazy. But how to get rid of it? The mother goes through immense suffering, great sacrifice. Hence, in the East, we have not created the idea of a skinny woman. Of course, the skinny woman looks more sexually attractive, younger. The fat woman looks less sexually interesting because she loses proportions. Her waist is no more very small. Her body has gathered so much fat that nobody will feel attracted towards her. She does not have necessary attraction from human mind. The East has accepted a woman has to be little. Fatty than man, a little more rounded. Just the other day, somebody has brought me a book of pictures taken by one famous photographer, and just on the page is Sophia Loren, front page. In the East, she cannot be conceived very beautiful. She must be dieting. And dieting is nothing but the rich man's idea of starvation. The poor people starve by themselves. The rich people starve in a costly way under a professional guidance. And the fear that you will not be attractive. That you will not be any more looked by people. You will pass from the street and nobody will look back who is going. It is a great need of men and particularly women to have attention. Attention is nourishment. A woman suffers immensely when nobody pays any attention towards her. She has nothing else to attract people. She has only her body. Man has not allowed her to have other dimensions where she can become a famous painter or a dancer or a singer, a learned professor. Man has cut all other dimensions from the woman's life where she can be attractive and people will pay respect even while she becomes old. I have to remind you the meaning of respect. It means looking back. When somebody passes by, respect. It has nothing to do with honor. It has something to do that you are suddenly aware that a beautiful thing has passed. So woman is left by man only just body. So she is so much concerned with the body. That creates clinging, possessiveness, fear that the person who loves her, if he leaves, perhaps he will find another person or not. And without attention, he starts feeling almost dead. What is the use of life if nobody is paying attention to you? She does not have an intrinsic life of her own. Man has taught her that your life depends on our opinion about you. You see that all over the world beauty competitions are arranged only for women. And the woman does not even revolt against these ideas. That why not for men? Just as you choose a Mr., Mrs. or Miss Universe, choose a Mr. Universe. No, nobody bothers about man's body. He can go fat. He can become Winston Churchill. Still he attracts the attention because he has power. In the same book, just by Sophia Loren, is standing Winston Churchill. Ugly, as fat as you can conceive. The whole face hanging. He needs a facelift, not Sophia Loren. But he will not bother. There is no need. He can have power, he can be the prime minister, he can be this and he can be that. Man has managed in centuries to have all other dimensions of attracting people, and he has left to woman only one dimension, her body. He has made woman just a vegetable. And naturally the vegetable starts being worried if there are no customers. It is not a coincidence that the most sexually perverted country, France, talks about while in love with a woman that I want to eat you. Are these people cannibals? Is the woman a vegetable or what? I want to eat you is a great respect to the woman. When nobody says to her, I want to eat you, she thinks, I am now finished. Life has come to an end. But here with me you have to learn something. First thing is a deep acceptability of all the changes that nature brings to you. Youth has its own beauty, old age has its own beauty too. It may not be sexual, but if a man has lived silently, peacefully, meditatively, then the old age will have a grandeur of its own. Just as the snow-covered peaks look beautiful, the white hairs of old age also have their own beauty. And not only beauty, but wisdom too, which no young man can claim. Because all his behavior is stupid. He is running behind this woman, running behind that woman. The old man has stopped all this running business. He has settled in himself. He is no more dependent on anybody else. The old woman should follow the same way. There should be no difference between man and woman. That's why I was simply laughing and joking about the question of Prem Sunya. Because I did not want her to become serious about something which is natural. And if Milarepa feels angry, he simply proves what I have been saying, that he is crazy. Now he is running for younger women. This shows that you are not maturing, not learning that what you call love is not love but biological slavery. Love happens only when you are beyond biological slavery. Then love has a beauty. Biological slavery and the biological relationship is so ugly that for centuries people have decided to make love in darkness without light, so they don't see what they are doing. Particularly, the woman is very sensitive. When you make love to her, she immediately closes her eyes. just to see this nasty thing that is happening. I have heard that when Henry Ford died, he was received with a great welcome in heaven, and even God thanked him that you have done great service to humanity by creating so many cars. You are a great creator. Henry Ford said, that's okay, but you are not that great a creator. You have put man's body in such a stupid way that the loveliest part people think about, dream about, is so close to the dirtiest parts. Could not you find somewhere else in the whole body? Why love has to be sandwiched between the ugliest parts? You don't have any sense, no aesthetics. The exhaust pipe is so close to the most lovely part that I cannot believe that you are a great creator. And he was right. God has committed many mistakes. This is one of the major mistakes. The loving part could have been anywhere else. You have 6 feet body, so much territory. And what kind of a stupid God, where he finds the loving part? It is to be not only accepted when life is going through a biological change, it has to be rejoiced that you have passed over all that stupidity, that now you are free from biological bondage. It is only a question of conditioning. But when you ask questions to me, you should remember that I never in any way want to hurt you. Even sometimes if I have to avoid the truth, I avoid it, but don't hurt you. If you get hurt about something, that must be your own mind. But perhaps you are just a victim in that too. It is unconscious. Devagit, you are asking how is it that going into something consciously has such a power to reveal all the threads which make up the tangle. They have been made in your unconsciousness. They have been made in the darkness of your being. And when you bring light, naturally you see all the tangle, how you have created your misery, your suffering, your anguish yourself. Seeing it is enough. All those tangles disappear. A conscious man never creates any tangle. He lives more intensely than anybody else, but his life is without any tangles. For the simple reason, because in consciousness you cannot create tangles. Abhi's wife had just died, and he was standing over the grave and sobbing uncontrollably. His best friend put his arm around him and said, "Abhi, time is a wonderful thing. Believe it or not, someday you will want to start a new life again and be with people, maybe even get married again. Listen to me, time heals wounds." Abhi looked at him and replied, I know, but what am I going to do tonight?" Such is the unconsciousness of man. The wife has died in the morning and he is worried about what he is going to do in the night. Tonight. And you are talking about time, that someday wounds will be healed. What about tonight? I have heard an ancient story, Arabic, that a man's father died and all the old people of the neighborhood came and said, "Don't be worried, son. If you have lost your father, we are here. Don't think for a single moment that you are fatherless. We are all your fathers. You can come always to us for any difficulty, any problem." He was very much consoled, seeing the concern of his neighborhood people. He had never thought that they will be so considerate. And then his mother died, and all the old women came and said, "Don't be worried, we are still alive. You can look at us as your mother, and whatever your mother was doing for you, we can do. There is no problem about it." He was very much consoled, and then his wife died. And not a single wife from the neighborhood came. That don't be worried. We are here. Whatever your wife was doing, we will do. The man was very angry. He stood in front of his house, watching that anybody comes or not. Nobody came. Finally, he started shouting that, "You nasty people, when my father died, all the old people came. When my mother died, all the old women came. And now my wife has died, and no young woman is coming. What kind of neighborhood is this?" Absurd, illogical. I am waiting from the morning that somebody will turn up, but nobody is coming. One has to accept life. But your unconsciousness does not allow you to accept life as it is. You want it something else. It is perfectly good when sex disappears. You will be more capable of meditating. You will be more capable of being alone. You will be more capable of being blissful without any misery, because the whole game of sex is nothing but a long misery, fighting, hate, jealousy, envy. It is not a peaceful life. And it is peace, silence, blissfulness, aloneness, freedom, which give you the real taste what life is. Two women are talking in a tea room at 4 o'clock over large, gooey icy cream. Sundaes and little sugary cakes. They have not seen each other since high school days. And one is bragging about her very advantageous marriage. "My husband buys me whole new sets of diamonds when the ones I have get dirty," she says, "and I never even bother to clean them." "Fantastic," said the other woman. "Yes," says the first, "we get a new car every 2 months." "Fantastic," says the other. "And our house?" pursues the first woman. "Well, what is the use of talking about? It is just fantastic," finishes the other. "Yes, and tell me, what are you doing nowadays? Ask the first woman. I go to the charm school, says the other. Charm school? Why? How quaint. What do you learn there? Well, we learn to say fantastic instead of bullshit. In your unconsciousness, everything is bullshit. And when you become conscious, it is really fantastic. All tangles disappear, all problems disappear. But you need not to learn just in a charm school. Because in a charm school, deep down the woman is saying bullshit. And just repeating like a parrot, fantastic. But she means bullshit. Not in a charm school, but in a school where your unconsciousness is slowly disappears, leaving a luminous being within you, then there is no tangle in life. I have lived a very strange life. Anybody else would have found so many tangles in it, so many troubles. I have also passed through all kinds of tangles, troubles, problems, but I have remained unscratched. I have enjoyed the journey. Whatever life brought to me, I have enjoyed it. I have tried to make the best out of it, whatever it is. There is no point for crying and weeping for spilled milk. Any situation can be made a learning, a step towards maturity, can be turned into a beneficial opportunity. And that's what I call intelligence. Otherwise, what is the difference between intelligent people and unintelligent people? Devagift it is true, consciousness has tremendous power, but it is not used in revealing and dispersing the tangles of your life. They simply disappear as you become conscious. Gautam Buddha used to say that when the lights are on, and from the windows people can see that the master is awake, thieves don't come close. When the lights are put off, then only thieves come close to the house to see whether the master has gone to sleep and is it right time to enter. He was saying this about consciousness. He used to call sex, greed, lust for power, position, respectability, all thieves. They come to you only when they see that there is no light in the man. Inside it is all dark. Once you are radiating consciousness and light, those thieves don't come close to you. But consciousness has its own power. This is simply the presence of consciousness, that tangles disappear. The power is not used for dispersing the tangles and problems. The power is to bring blissfulness, the power is to bring peace, silence, at homeness, at easiness, and a tremendous ecstasy, a divine drunkenness. Life becomes for the first time self-oriented. You don't have to beg from others for anything. Nobody can give you blissfulness, nobody can give you ecstasy, nobody can give you the sense of immortality and the dance that comes with it. Nobody can give you the silence which becomes a song in your heart. What people can give to you? In fact, the power of consciousness gives you so much that you are capable to share with people. For the first time, you can give to people. They are living in darkness. They don't have seen any light. They don't have any idea what a conscious being is. They don't have any conception, comprehension of the power of consciousness, that how many flowers shower, how much fragrance becomes natural to you. You can give, and you can give them a taste, and you can give them a direction, so they can also find the same power which is dormant in them. A conscious man awakened can help millions of people to move towards the source of joy, real and authentic life, to pure love, which knows nothing of hate, which knows nothing of jealousy, which has nothing to do with body and biology, which is just a spiritual communion, a feeling of deep compassion for your innermost being. Yes, the power of consciousness gives you many things. The treasure is inexhaustible. But your problems and tangles that have been created by unconsciousness, for them no power is needed. Just the presence of consciousness is enough.
Beloved Master Bhagwan, can you say something about virtue?
Fantastic. Here we are not concerned about virtue at all. Virtue is for people who are unconscious. It is a training for them that don't say bullshit, say fantastic. Virtue is a training, a discipline imposed on unconscious people. All the religions talk about virtue as against sin. They have made fixed categories. Some things are condemned as sin, and some things are praised as virtues. And the virtuous man will have immense reward after death. And the sinner will be condemned to hell fire for eternity. This is the strategy of fear and greed, because man can be easily manipulated by these two things, fear and greed. Heaven is nothing but greed exaggerated. So is hell, fear exaggerated. And human beings are afraid eternal hellfire. Out of fear, they somehow try to avoid whatever is sin. And the trouble is, anything that gives you joy, anything that gives you pleasure is sin. Out of fear, they lose all contact with life. They become dry and dead before their death. Only one consolation is there, that they are declared saints. They are worshipped. Just their ego is satisfied greatly, otherwise they are suffering deep down immensely. That's why our saints can't laugh. Laughter needs a little juice in you. There is no juice. Everything is dry. There are deserts where nothing grows green. So on the one hand, the pressure of fear. I have seen pictures of Middle Ages. There were such Christian preachers. They made so much fuss about hell and its tortures that just in the church, listening to their sermons, many ladies used to faint. Just the idea that they were going into such detail, what will be done to you? The people, the preachers were thought great according to how much they can impact people's psychologies. The greatest preacher was one in whose congregation almost everybody faints. A deep fear psychology, a deep guilt psychology, on the one hand, and on the other hand, greed to be fulfilled as a reward. You will be getting in paradise everything. All those things which are sin here on the earth, they will be also available to you. Mohammedans are against alcohol, but in their paradise there are rivers of alcohol. You don't have to go to a small pub and you can drink, you can drown, you can swim. All the rivers, they don't consist of water, pure wine. Here it is condemned that you should not fall in the traps of love. A woman is condemned, and in the heaven, in every religion's idea of heaven, woman is freely supplied. Of course, according to your virtue, you will get if your virtue is great, perhaps Sophia Loren. It all depends on your virtue. A strange game has been played with human minds. thousands of girls. I say girls because they don't grow in age. They don't have to fear like Prem Sunya. They are fixed for eternity at the age 16. In fact, they are prostitutes, eternal prostitutes, but they are thought to be rewards for saints. How many other saints have used those rewards? Because since the beginning, the same staff is working. Not even a shift change, because I have never come across in the Holy Scriptures about shift change or any staff change. The same young women, and they remain always young, they don't perspire. They do not need deodorants. They must be certainly made of plastic, because only plastic does not perspire. A real skin is bound to perspire if it is alive. Because from every pore of the skin you are breathing in. And perspiration is a natural way of keeping you at the same body temperature. If it is too cold, you start shivering. You may not be aware why you are shivering. You think it is because of the cold. It is to keep your body temperature at the same continuously. Shivering gives you inner heat. In hot season, you perspire. You perspire so that your water perspiration is taken away by the heat. It evaporates. So the heat does not affect your temperature. It simply evaporates your perspiration and leaves you without increasing your temperature. Otherwise, if there was no perspiration, your life span is not very big. It can be measured in many ways, in years, 70 years. But as body temperature from 98 to 110, just 12 degrees is your span of life. If there was no perspiration, your temperature is going to be as high as the heat is around you. The moment you pass 105, you will start getting dizzy. The moment you pass 107, you will be falling in a coma. The moment you pass 110, you have passed away. It is the perspiration that is saving you. It is your life savior. But those poor plastic girls, an eternal promise for all joys, the Hindu heaven has certain trees which they call kalp vrikshas. This fulfillment trees, you don't have to order a cup of tea or a woman. Or a car, you don't have to order anybody, you don't have to call any bira or give a phone call to some agency. You just sit under the wistfulling tree and they are all over heaven, everywhere. Just you sit underneath and you say whatever you want, and immediately, instantly, it will be provided. There is a beautiful story of a man who by some accident stumbled in heaven. He had no idea where he has reached. And he was sitting under a kalpa vriksha. He was feeling very hungry. He has been traveling a lot and that's how he has stumbled somehow by accident in heaven. He said, I am feeling hungry, but I don't see anywhere any hotel, restaurant, nothing. I don't see even a single man, but I am feeling very hungry. If I could get some good food, immediately beautiful women appeared from nowhere, with all kinds of sweets and delicious foods. He was so hungry that he did not pay attention to the fact from where all these things are coming. He started eating, feeling perfectly well. He was tired. He went to sleep. Before going to sleep, he thought that sleeping on the ground, uneven, with his stones, if someone could arrange just a mattress. And suddenly, he could not believe, again beautiful women appeared with a beautiful bed, and they put him on the bed. But he was so tired that he still did not think that what is going on. When refreshed, he awoke. He thought, my God, there is nobody here who has brought the food. And I have not said to anybody. I had just thought about it. And he looked at the beautiful bed. Who has brought this? I had simply thought, lying down on the ground, it seems there must be ghosts around. That is the natural conclusion. Because he was not aware that he is in heaven under a kalpa vriksha. There must be ghosts all around, my God. And immediately ghosts appeared, because whatever you will say, the moment he saw the skeletons of ghosts dancing all around, he said, my God, they are going to kill me. And they killed him. The man never came back home. Religions have used fear to prevent you from living, and greed to help you so that you can be patient and hope that great things are ahead. Just the small things you are living, and for eternity you will enjoy all pleasures that you want, and you don't have to pay for it. Virtue is the currency of heaven. The more virtuous you are, the more bigger bank balance you have in heaven. I don't teach you virtue, because your virtue is false, because deep down there is greed. I teach you only awareness. Out of awareness, whatever you do is virtue according to me. And out of unawareness, whatever you do is sin according to me. And according to me, your sins are not going to take you to hell. Your sins immediately give you hell here, just now. And your virtues are not going to give you an eternity of paradise. Your virtues give you joy, blissfulness. The moment you act with full awareness, the punishment and the reward is immediate. It follows your action, but your action depends where it will lead you. It can be unconscious action, then hell. Here now, it is nothing to do with geography. It is something to do with your psychology. Acting consciously, you are in paradise wherever you are. Once you have learned, you will not ask what is virtue. You will ask what is awareness, what is consciousness. You will ask what is meditation, because that is going to make you conscious and make you alert. What brings misery is sin, and whatever brings joy is virtue. Alfred North Whitehead has a beautiful statement. It requires a very unusual mind to make an analysis of the obvious. To me, it is absolutely obvious that virtue or sin, heaven or hell, are secondary. The primary is your alertness, your awareness. But people won't ask the obvious. These are byproducts. And by getting entangled with byproducts, you will be in trouble. There is a tale concerning Sherlock Holmes and John Watson on board a train. They passed a herd of sheep, and Watson said, "A sizable herd, Holmes, exactly 784 in number, my dear Watson," said Holmes sleepily. "Good heavens, Holmes," said Watson, "surely you can't have counted them." "They are in a train. The train has passed. The sheep, their herd is left far behind, and it must have taken a single moment to pass that herd." "Not directly," said Holmes. "I made use of a simple trick any school child knows. I merely counted the legs and divided by four." Just don't get into nonsense. Otherwise, you will always feel what Leonardo da Vinci has confessed in his letters. "I have offended God and mankind because my work did not reach the quality it should have." Now, Leonardo da Vinci is one of the greatest genius, and whatever he has done is incomparable. There is nobody else who even comes close to him. But even such a great man feels a little guilt that I have not reached the quality it should have. This is the atmosphere that religions have created in the world. They don't allow anybody to be at ease, even the greatest genius. They go on telling you that you are still not doing right. You are still far away from the goal. You are still unworthy. You are always unworthy. They will not leave you at peace
so that you can enjoy life and love life and be grateful to God and be grateful to the universe, which both mean the same to me. God is not a person, it is this whole universe, these trees, these clouds, the sun, the stars, you and everybody, whether asleep or awake, whether committing sins or virtues, you are part of one organic universe. If you commit a sin, the word sin has been contaminated by the religions. Otherwise, it simply means in its roots unforgetfulness, unawareness. It exactly means what I am saying to you. Sin is your unawareness. Any action done in unconsciousness is sin. But religions have completely destroyed the original meaning of the word. And whatever you are doing consciously is virtue. And there is no ready-made list what are virtues, because in a different situation the same thing may become sin. The thing that was virtue in one condition, in one context, may not be virtue in another context. It all depends but how you are going to be knowing whether in this context it is virtue or sin. Those dead categories that have been given to you, like 10 commandments, fixed forever, they don't take count of the fact that life is continuously changing. And you are moving every moment into a new situation, and a new situation needs a new response. So I can't give you any ready-made list that avoid these things, these are sin, and avoid them because they will lead you into hell. I cannot exploit you and your fears, and I cannot say to you that these are the commandments, if you follow, yours is the kingdom of God, because in life things go on changing. It happened, I had a friend, he was a professor in the university, a very learned professor of Sanskrit, and he wanted to go to Tibet because many scriptures in Sanskrit on Buddhism had been burnt by the Hindus in India. But their translations exist in Tibetan still. So he wanted to translate them back into Sanskrit. It was a great idea, and he was well versed in Sanskrit, and he was learning Tibetan for years, and now he was ready. But he was a Brahmin by caste, and very orthodox Brahmin. In India, it is perfectly good to get up 5 o'clock early in the morning and have a good bath in the nearby lake or in the nearby river, and then do your prayer, meditate. Only after that you enter into the mundane world of your profession, your life, your family. In Tibet, the Tibetan holy book says that one bath each year is absolutely compulsory. Tibetan monks are the dirtiest people to find. I had been harassed by Tibetan monks. When the first time Dalai Lama came, escaped from Tibet with thousands of lamas, I was taking a camp in Bodh Gaya, and all the lamas first came to pay respect to the place where Gautam Buddha had become enlightened. And I was taking a camp just there, in the compound of the memorial temple for Buddha. I had never come across Tibetan lamas, but such are habits, they die very hard. They use, I think, 3-4 fold clothes. One on another, and their clothes are greasy, dusty, and they will not take any bath, because their holy scripture says once in a year is compulsory. When my friend reached Tibet, he continued to follow his pattern of life in India. He could not manage to be there more than 3 days, because he had to take a bath early in the morning, 5 o'clock, according to the Brahmin religion. Without taking a bath, you cannot eat. That is a sin. And in India, it's certainly right. But in Tibet, the whole context is different. To take a bath in ice-cold water, 5 o'clock in the early morning, is to freeze yourself to death. Food is not a problem. you will not be able to eat food. In 3 days, he got so tortured by this morning bath. One day he tried, it was too much. The whole day he was feeling as if his blood has frozen. And for other 2 days he could not eat because he could not take the bath. So he had taken only one bath in Tibet, and one day he has eaten, and 2 days he remained without food, but he thought, how long it will be, because I cannot survive without food. Neither I can survive with the bath. It is better to go home. Forget all about those scriptures. It is none of my business. He came back. I was surprised when I saw him back, that so quick you managed to translate. He said, forget all about translation. Congratulate me that I am alive. And when he told me, then I said that this is stupidity. In Tibet, you should look at the context, not that your Hindu idea of virtue and sin, that is stupidity. Mohammedans have been allowed by their founder, Muhammad, 4 wives, and it is perfectly virtuous to have 4 wives. Muhammad himself married 9 wives. Obviously, he was a prophet. No ordinary man. But it was perfectly right in those times, because the Arabs were continuously fighting and killing. But only men were killed. It was against their culture to kill any woman. The women were raped, but not killed. So there was a strange situation. Women were 4 times more than men. If he has insisted that monogamy is virtue, as it is being insisted all over the world, that polygamy or even bigamy is a crime, is a sin, he would not have been right. Because if monogamy was to be virtuous, what will happen to 3 women who are left without men? They will corrupt the whole society. They will become prostitutes. And the whole society will become a ugly scene. So Muhammad is perfectly right. I support him. But not now in India, where women and men are equal, as they are everywhere. Nature keeps a balance, exact balance. To keep the balance, nature has to take care. It gives birth to 115 boys. When it gives birth to 100 girls, because 15 boys will pop out before the time of marriage. Boys are weak and fragile. The ordinary idea that the women are weak and fragile is just male chauvinistic imposition. Nature knows better. 15 boys per 100 are going to die. Girls don't die. They have a more resistance against diseases. They are not so much sick, and they live longer than men, 5 years longer, all over the world. So by the time the marriageable age comes, there are 100 boys and 100 girls. Monogamy seems to be absolutely right in this context. But Mohammedans go on insisting that it is part of their religion. So even in India, they are allowed to have 4 wives. And it is such an ugly situation, because it means 3 men will remain without wives. So the Mohammedans abdicate women from other religions, and particularly Hindus are very touchy people. If a woman forcibly has been taken by the Mohammedans in their home, they have not even touched her, but she will not be acceptable back to the Hindu fold. She has to go to the Mohammedans. She has fallen below the dignity of a Hindu. So Mohammedans have been continuously stealing women from other societies. They have to, because what to do with the 3 men that are without women? Otherwise, those 3 men will start relationships with others' wives, and that will create a mess. And even the Indian constitution, in the name of religion, that we don't want to interfere in any religion, cannot do anything to prevent Mohammedans from this polygamy. And those 4 women that they marry they use as economic, financial help. They work and the husband rests. This is great. and the Mohammedan priests go on insisting that no interference, because a man with four women can create four children per year very easily. But a woman with four men cannot create four children. She will create only one child. So the population of Mohammedans goes on increasing, as nobody else can increase the population the way they can increase. So you will be surprised that India has been divided. Mohammedans have taken Pakistan separate. The country has been cut into three parts. One side is Pakistan, given to Mohammedans. Another side is Bangladesh, given to Mohammedans. And still, within 40 years, Mohammedans are again number two to Hindus. Again, they can ask for another country. And you will be also surprised that India is a Hindu country, but the number of Mohammedans in India is more than in any Mohammedan country in the world, not even in Arabia or Egypt or Iran or Libya or Palestine. No Mohammedan country has so many Mohammedans as India has. India is the greatest Mohammedan country in the world, if you take the number of the Mohammedans. And the number goes on growing four times more. Hindus are simply puzzled what to do, because soon they will be outnumbering Hindus. They have taken Pakistan, they have taken Bangladesh, and it is not far away when they will be majority and Hindus will become minority in their own country. Situations, contexts should be taken in account, and that is possible only if you are living a very alert and conscious life. Otherwise, you will follow dead, ready-made things which may have been sometime relevant. But those times have changed and they have become irrelevant. But the list continues to be the same. So I don't give you any list. I have been asked by priests, Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, that I should make a clear-cut statement. What are sins? What are virtues? And what is my fundamental principles of religion? I said, my first fundamental and the last fundamental is that religion cannot be a fixed thing. It has to be spontaneous. It has to come out of your awareness. Nobody can decide it. No catechism can be given according to me. I can only teach you awareness, and then you find out with your awareness, with your own light, where to go, what to do. Anything done with awareness is virtue. Anything done with unawareness is a sin. Okay.
Yes, Bhagwan. relaxing yourself.